Oh, carbon dioxide. Well, it's not actually.
You use something else. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, it,
I might try and get that.
Yeah. I can't remember now. There is one which is. That's the chloride.
That's it. Yeah.
There's something which is about twice as heavy as the.
That's safe to. Well, relatively safe to.
Which is safe to. Yeah, you've got to be very careful, haven't you? What you can be.
That's your radio mic.
Thank you.
You're right, Dan?
Yeah.
Cheers. All right, welcome to the second of the Informatics 2C Computer Systems lectures. The topic for today is going to be data representation. So what we're going to be looking at here is the way in which data is, we're looking at how the way data is represented affects things like the complexity of the circuits in the computers, affects then the cost and the speed and reliability of machines. So we could kind of, if we were designing computers from scratch, we could consider, what we would then have to consider how the data representation affects, say, the design of memories, so devices for storing data, and also how that choice affects how we manipulate data. So how we say, if we've got numbers, how we multiply those numbers or add those numbers. So that's the kind of context of today's lecture. We're going to be really, because of time limitations, really we're going to be looking at the particular design decisions that are standard in computers today. I mean, in the history of computers, there were other designs considered, and I'll just mention those briefly in one or two places as we're going along. I don't have time to go into them further. So we've been looking at the concept of the bit, Hopefully you're familiar with this, and then how we use bits to represent numerical quantities such as integers and floating point numbers, and then how we use a little bit about how we represent text using bits. So hopefully some of this stuff is more or less reviewed, but hopefully too there's some new stuff in the material today as well that you haven't been exposed to in your first year courses. All right, so there's this basic concept that we can represent information using sequences of symbols. So we're familiar with this from everyday life with the concept of text. So text is a sequence of things like symbols like letters and numbers and punctuation symbols. So in the computer world, what's been found to work best is to not use what we use when we write down things on paper, but just to use sequences of zeros and ones, what we call bits. So use a system that's much, much simpler. So this word bit, it's an acronym for binary digit, so a digit that can be one of two things, a zero or a one. So when we choose to use a very parsimonious way to represent each piece of information, we've got little information per bit, so if we want to kind of talk about a number, we've got to use a lot of these. So in some sense, using a binary representation using bits isn't very compact. On the other hand, there are huge advantages which way outweigh that small disadvantage. So kind of storing, designing devices to store data and to manipulate data becomes much, much simpler. And we can design reliable, simple circuits when we've got this very simple way of representing each elementary piece of data. If we move on here to reviewing, hopefully, how we use information stored as binary digits to represent numbers. So how we represent numbers in binary. So there's this basic idea of just as when we write down normal numbers, we have columns with different weightings. But the columns, when we write down a binary number, have binary weightings. So here we've got kind of slots, boxes we'd put binary digits into, so zeros and ones into each of these digits. And then if we consider this sequence of binary digits as a number, then we assign weightings to each of these digits, and these are the weightings we assign. We assign weightings which are powers of two. Conventionally, when we write numbers, we just as in decimal, we start with the units on the right. So here we've got the binary units, two to the zero, the weight of two to the zero. And as we move up along here, we've got weights which are successively larger by a factor of two as we move each slot. So just like in decimal, except that instead of moving up by a factor of 10 as we move to the left, we move up by a factor of 2 as we move to the left. So hopefully you've seen this kind of basic concept of a binary number before. Then when we have binary numbers, come on. Doing things like arithmetic is analogous to the way in which we do it in decimal, say on paper, but things become a lot simpler because we're not dealing with digits between 0 and 9, we're dealing just with the digits 0 and 1. So for example,
here on the left we have two binary numbers, this one here in normal decimal notation is the number 13. So we've got an 8, a 4, and a 1. And this number here is 11, an 8, a 2, and a 1. If we add these in binary, what we do, let's see, I guess this is going to be a transition. Yes, so we add a 1 and a 1, we get a 0, carry 1. We add a 0 and a 1, and the carry, We get a 0, carry 1 again. Keep on going.
Keep on going, come on.
And there's a next place, so we've got a 1, carry, add a 1, get a 0, carry 1 yet again. And we keep on going, and we end up with a carry of 1, add a 1, and a 1, get a 1, carry 1 again. A 1 plus a 0 plus a 0 gives us a 1. So the point is here, we're going through the same mechanics that you go through when you're doing basic primary school arithmetic with decimal numbers, except here we're just working with binary digits instead. And when we come to design digital hardware, encoding this basic idea of adding binary digits is a very simple thing to do. So here, if you want to check the results of doing a binary addition, you can convert this binary number back to decimal, and you see it's 24, and you can confirm indeed that 24 is 13 plus 11. I'll leave that as an exercise to kind of work through a subtraction here, where you're borrowing extra numbers here, but it's a very similar process that one goes through. All right, when we do arithmetic on computers and we're storing and passing around numbers in binary notation, typically we don't deal with sequences of ones and zeros of arbitrary length. We deal with fixed length words. So commonly we deal with a byte, an 8-bit word, or we deal with just what we call words. Often these are can be 32 bits or 64 bits long. One consequence of working with a fixed number of bits is that sometimes we get this concept of overflow. If you've got two large numbers which just fit within some representation that you've got, some fixed number of bits, then when you add them, you might get a number which doesn't fit within that same fixed number of bits, and we call that concept overflow. When this happens, typically what we do is we're just going to forget the extra carries we get off the left-hand side. So if we... I'm going to have to go through this again. If we were working just with 4-bit words, sometimes called nibbles, and say we were forgetting these zeros here, we added these two numbers here, if we're storing the result as a 4-bit result, we might just forget this number here. When we do this, effectively we're working a modulo 2 to the number of bits. So here, say if we deal with 4-bit words, we're working modulo 2 to the 4, or mod 16. So if we added 13 and 11 mod 16, we would get just the number 1000, which is the number 8. So 13 plus 11 is indeed equal to 8 mod 16. So that's the kind of arithmetic effect of working to a fixed word size is to be doing arithmetic mod 2 to the n, where n is the number of bits that we've got. So that's the comment at the bottom here on this slide. What about what happens when now we want to do not just deal with non-negative numbers, positive numbers, and zero, but we want to talk about negative numbers too? So typically when we write negative numbers on paper, we start putting pluses and minuses in front of our numbers. But say if we're working in a binary representation when all we've got around are zeros and ones, then we can't use these special symbols. There are various ways then that people have come up with for representing negative numbers using just ones and zeros. One common method is what's called the sign magnitude representation. let's see. We haven't introduced what this acronym MSB. Yes, we did. We talked about it. It was a couple of slides before, so I didn't. I jumped over that. But yes, so. Come on. You're here, we've got this notation. So the when we write a binary number like this, we call this bit here on the right, the rightmost bit, the least significant bit, and this one, this leftmost one, the most significant bit, or the MSB, and here the LSB. So I just used a new PDF converter today, and it wasn't doing it. My old one wasn't doing this, so I'm just getting used to it. All right, so negative numbers. Sign magnitude representation. So the idea here is, let's see if we have some chalk somewhere. So if we have our word here with slots for bits, what we do is we say all these bits are going to be used to represent the magnitude of the number, and then this bit here will be a sign bit. And if this is a zero, say it will be a positive number. If it's a one, it'll be, that will mean that this here is a negative number. So for example, if I gave you the number, just say a four-bit number, 1101, and I said that was in signed magnitude representation, what number would you say that is? I hear minus 5. Any other offers? Does minus 5 sound like the right number? Well, you're right. So minus 5 it is. So what we have here is 101. A 4 and a 1 makes 5. And the 1 here is saying that this is a negative number. If we had put a 0 here, then that would just be plus 5. So the sign magnitude representation is one way of representing numbers which can be integers, which can be both positive and negative. People have built computers using sign magnitude representation of integers. And what they found is that it makes the design of arithmetic circuits for, say, doing adding and multiplying a little bit more complicated than it quite has to be. There's a slightly better representation, but by and large is the most common representation used today for integers. And we'll come on to that in just in the next slide. It's what's called the 2's complement representation. So the idea, the kind of motivation for 2's complement goes back to the idea of modular arithmetic. So this is electronic, of course. Right, that's for that board. This is for this one. So if we, how does it work? Yeah, say we're just doing numbers mod 100, then the number minus 1 mod 100 is the same as the number 99. So we can, if we're kind of thinking modular arithmetic, we can take our negative numbers and we can convert them to numbers which are kind of in the conventional range of numbers when we're working mod a given base, like 100 here. So we do something quite similar in binary. Another way of motivating it is just to kind of mechanically try to do some arithmetic. Take, say, one to represent minus 1, and let's actually do some arithmetic up the top there. Let's take the number 0, and let's just try taking away 1 from that, and then just see what happens. And then if we do that, we get the number 111.
And this actually is doing that arithmetic there. And then if we do that, then let's just say forget what happens when we're borrowing beyond the third column. When we do that, we're doing something very much like what we're doing here. We're working with three digits, we're working mod 8. So we're saying 0 minus 1 is the same as 7. So that's a fact, mod 8. One kind of way of... So that's kind of working mod 8. Then a kind of extra thing that we do when we're working with 2's complement notation is we decide, well, say all, if we're working mod 100, we would decide all the numbers from 50 up to 99. Perhaps all those numbers are negative, and all the numbers from 0 up to 49, we'll say those are those numbers usually we'll think of as being positive numbers. So we'll have a kind of a way of moving back from numbers mod, say 100, unsigned numbers, back to signed numbers. And up here is another way of kind of moving back from a 2's complement number back to a decimal number. And it's simply this, we say the columns are weighted as before, but all columns except for the rightmost one, we say all these columns here are weighted just using powers of 2 as before. But we say this one's weighted with a negative power of 2 to the n minus 1 instead of a positive power that we had before. So now, if we were to write down a number like 1101, a 4-bit 2's complement number, to ask, well, what is that number as a kind of normal decimal number, what would you say? So we're going to be using just the translation scheme on the slide there. I hear some minus 3's. Any other offers? Indeed, minus 3 is the correct answer. And how do we see that? Well, we say the weight of this column is minus 8. So this is minus 8. The weight of this is plus 4. So we do minus 8 plus 4. We've got no weight, none of the 2's, and we've got a 1 there. So we do a plus 1, and that's equal to minus 3. Is that clear? So, question?
Instead of 0, there would be 1, it would be minus 2.
I'm sorry?
If there would be 1 instead of 0.
If there was a 1 here, then we would add an extra 2 and would have minus 1. Yes. So we've got a scheme for now. So now if we've got now what's very nice about this scheme is that this digit at the front still gives us the sign of the number. So if this digit at the front is 0, then we have a positive number as before. If this digit is a 1, then no matter what we make these digits, the value of the whole number is always negative. So we know that the number is negative. So this tells us, if this is a 1, it tells us tells us that the number is negative. If it's 0, it tells us that the whole number is either 0 or it's strictly positive. Now, the scheme may seem a little bit quirky, but the beautiful thing about it is that then we can take the same arithmetic circuits, say for doing addition or multiplication, that we did use, say we designed for doing arithmetic on unsigned numbers, and that very same circuitry will give the correct arithmetic results when we're working on these 2's complement signed numbers instead. So this might sound a little bit like magic, but it kind of all goes back to this business of modular arithmetic, that really what you're doing when you're working with these 2's complement numbers is you're working mod you've got n bits, you're working mod 2 to the n. And that's why the arithmetic all works out in the end. So what's beautiful is that a 2's complement adder is it's the same adder as you use for unsigned numbers. It's no more complicated. So that's why 2's complement representation of negative numbers has really caught on, because it allows us to use simple designs for hardware. All right, so I said a bit of what's on this slide here. The most significant bit is the sign. One feature we get is that the range is asymmetric. If we have, if we look at, say, we've got these 4-digit numbers, the most negative number is 1000, which is -8. But the most positive number is 0111, which is +7. So we don't get a symmetric upper bound and a lower bound in the range of numbers we represent. This is just a feature of the representation system. And we have to watch it sometimes because, as it says down here, well, we'll come to that in a second. Sometimes we might have -8 represented in our system, and we might say, well, what's the negation of -8? Well, it's +8, and suddenly we've got a number which can't be represented in the same number of bits that we had before. So it's a kind of slight, I'd say just a feature of the representation. With 2's complement numbers, we talk about, or in general with even signed magnitude numbers, we can talk about two kinds of overflow. Sometimes we say that positive overflow is when you add 2 numbers and you get a number that's too big to be represented within that fixed number of bits. Sometimes, too, we talk about underflow when we talk about adding 2 negative numbers and we get a number which is too negative to fit within that number of bits that we have. The process, there's a very nice, simple way to negate a number. And that's the following. To invert, we invert all the bits and add 1 at the least significant bit. So, for example, if we take the number +5, which is that, if we negate all the bits, we get 1010. We now add 1 to that. We get 1011, and you can easily verify that that number by the system we looked at before is the number -5, as we would hope. So that's -8 +2 +1 is -5. So this operation here of 2's complement, or operation of complementing a number or negating a number, is done by using this process. So negating the digits or complementing the digits and then adding 1. Again, if you're mathematically inclined, you might be wondering, well, what on earth is going on here? What happens when we just flip all the bits to the arithmetic value of the number? Any volunteers for that? If we... You've got half the answer there. It's all to do, again, with modular arithmetic. That when we invert the digits, that's the same as doing a subtraction. So if we take 0101, or we invert all the bits to get 1010, that's the same as doing this sum here, as taking the number of all ones, which is 2 to the 4 minus 1, and subtracting 5. So if we do that subtraction, so flipping a bit is the same as doing 1 minus that bit. So 1 minus 1 goes 0, 1 minus 0
goes to 1, 1 minus 1 goes to 0, 1 minus 0 goes to 1. So flipping bits is the same as doing subtraction, and then adding 1, if we do an add 1 here, and what we're really doing is, well, this number of all 1s is 2 to the 4 minus 1, we're coming adding 1, so the whole operation, when we get 1, 0, 1, 1, what we're really getting is 2 to the 4 minus 5. So we're really just taking the number of minus 5, and we're adding 2 to the 4 to it. So we're kind of staying at the same number if we're considering doing modular arithmetic. So that's just a kind of aside. This is not examinable, but this is just to kind of give you some little bit of mathematical insight into what's going on here, that 2's complement arithmetic and operations like this are really just working on numbers mod 2 to the n, where n is the number of bits. All right, let's see if we've done everything on this slide here. So we talked about negating a number. We talked about this overflow here. If you take 2 to the n minus 1 and you take its negation, even just one time, you already get overflow. So that was, I should probably correct the slide. I mean, this is correct. So minus 2 to the n minus 1, like here we've got minus 2 to 3 minus 1, sorry, 2 to the 4 minus 1. So this is, it's minus 2 to 3, which is minus 8. So we've got this number. If we just negate that number to get plus 8, already we've got actually an overflow. We've got a number that's too large to be represented in 4 bits. So really, this negative sign is superfluous here. We've got an overflow as soon as we... there are two things going on. Here, minus 2 to the m is a number. And then this here is an operation on this number here. And it's this operation of doing the negation of this number here that causes the overflow. So actually, the slide's right. But it's confusing because minus is actually being used in kind of two ways. One to just help us represent a number, and the other one to talk about the arithmetic operation of negation. Once we can do negation, we can do subtraction very easily. And subtraction just becomes the following. We do, to do A minus B, we do A plus the unary minus, the A plus the negation of B, or we do A plus the 2's complement of B. And what's particularly nice about this is, well, you might think, well, I've got to use 2 adders. I'd have to design 2 adder circuits to do this. I'd have to, because I've got to do an add 1 to calculate the 2's complement of B after I've flipped all the bits. And then I've got to add in A at the same time. It turns out when you design adders, you can design an adder that adds a number and kind of adds in a carry, adds in a bit, at the least significant bit, at the same time very, very easily. That's just the natural way which we design adders. And in a few lectures' time, we'll actually see the design of such a circuit. So we can do a binary subtraction using an adder, just using a conventional adder circuit, and just an extra circuit which can flip the bits of B. We need nothing more. All right, going to look at if we're working with, especially if we're working with 2's complement numbers, how we shift numbers between representations of different sizes. So very often we have numbers, say, which are 8-bit numbers, and now we want to treat them as 16-bit numbers or 32-bit numbers. Sometimes we go the other way, too. We have a long number, but actually we want to represent it in a smaller space, and we know it's small enough to fit into a smaller number of digits. But the easier case is to look at when we're going to a greater number of digits. So here we've just got two numbers for a thought experiment. We're dealing with 8-bit numbers in a 2's complement notation. And what we're asking is, well,
let's see how we can convert these 8-bit numbers to 16-bit numbers. So when we do this, it turns out that what we have to do is to simply add some digits, add some binary digits on the left-hand side. And the question is, what digits do we add? The number 2, the answer is fairly straightforward. We just pad on the left with zeros. So this is how we write 2 using 8 binary digits. And down here, this is how we use write it with 16. Now, however, let's kind of consider, well, what if these numbers are 2's complement numbers? It's not always quite so simple. So when we've got minus 2 and it's written down like this, the question is, well, what digit do we put here? And the answer turns out to be, in this case, all 1's. And the basic rule that you use for figuring out what to put, whether to put 1's here or 0's up the front here, is simply to look at the original number and look at whether it's positive or negative. And to tell that, all we've got to do is look at the most significant bit, just see whether it's a 0, in which case we know the number is positive, or a 1, in which case we know the number is negative. So here's, this is kind of showing the solution. So for minus 2, we look at this most significant bit, and we do what's called sign extension. We take that sign bit, and we just extend it through these extra left-hand places. And you can indeed verify, and just try some examples, and check that you get the right answer. And so similarly for 2, we put a 0 here, we just copy that 0 into all these new left positions in the digit, in the number, in order to get the expanded representation of the number. So here we've got the basic approach we use for going from a 2's complement number in some number of bits to 2's complement number in a greater number of bits. Let's look next at the effect of shifting on arithmetic values. So when we talk about shifting operations, what we're talking about is the following. Let's say we're just, for simplicity, we're just dealing with 4-bit binary numbers. A 1-bit shift to the left just means that we copy bits in our original word to one position to the left. And then becomes a question of, well, what do we put here? And typically when we do a shift to the left, we put a 0. If we're doing a shift to the right, there are actually a couple of choices as to what we do. And there are two different kinds, common kinds of right shifts that we do. So say we're just doing a 1-bit shift to the right, so we're doing something like this. The question is, what do we put there? One kind of shift right, called a logical shift right, is one where we always put a 0 there. Another kind of shift right, called an arithmetic shift right, says, well, look at whatever's here and duplicate it. So take that bit and also put it here. Why might we want to do this? Well, what we have to do is to, what I just talked about on the blackboard, on the slide as well, in the second and third bullets. So now we can start understanding why you might want to copy this for an arithmetic shift right. Start looking at how this shifting is affecting the arithmetic value of the number.
So for example, if we are shifting left, moving every digit here into a new column where it's worth twice as much. So a one bit shift left is the same as multiplying the arithmetic value of the number by 2. If we're shifting left by, say, k bits, assuming we don't overflow, assuming we don't shift any ones off the end here, then what we're doing is we're multiplying by 2 to the k. So if you want to have a very simple circuit that can multiply by 2 to the k, all you have to do is have a shifter circuit. What happens arithmetically when we shift to the right? Well, if we're dealing with unsigned numbers, then usually the right thing to do is to just shift in zeros here, and then shifting to the right is kind of moving numbers over to less significant columns. So if we shift one bit to the right, every digit suddenly is worth half as much as it was before, and in addition we're losing this least significant digit here. And the effect of that arithmetically, say if we're just doing a one bit shift to the right, is to divide by 2 and forget the fractional part. So if this number here was originally, say, 7, and we shifted 1 to the right, we'd get 0011, which would be 3. So we get 3 out because we've forgotten the 1 here. We don't get 3.5, we just get 3. If we're dealing with 2's complement numbers, just always shifting a 0 into this first position isn't the right thing to do. If we have a 1 here, we really want to remember that 1 and keep the number negative, keep the sign of the number right, and then things work out arithmetically. So for example, if this number here, let's say we had 1101, which is, what number is that? Sorry? -3. Do 2's complement. If we shift that, if we do an arithmetic shift right of that one position, we get 1 duplicated in 2 places. This 1 goes here, this 0 goes here, and we forget the 1 here. And now we've got the number -2. Well, if we, what's actually happening is we're taking -3, shift right 1 exactly would give us the number -1.5, but then we're rounding towards minus infinity, which is giving us -2. So in these two bullets here, I've got kind of summary again. So so shifting right by n positions is equivalent to dividing by 2 to the n and rounding down. Now we've done some examples on the board. This notation here, using double right arrow, is notation used in, say, C for doing a shift on a number of places right. So this says, take this binary number and shift it right by 2 places. All right, hexadecimal notation. So when we're writing down numbers that we're kind of entering into the computer, it's very tedious to use the binary system because the numbers are very long. So very commonly, we use hexadecimal instead. So hexadecimal is base 16. Hope maybe you're familiar with it. The idea is instead of using 10 digits, 0 to 9, we borrow the first 6 letters of the alphabet and treat those as numeric digits as well. So the letter A is used for kind of value of 10, B is used for 11, C for 12, D for 13, E for 14, F for 15. And when we do that, converting from binary to hexadecimal is very easy once we've memorized how to convert 4-digit sequences. So for example, if we've got this 8-digit number here, we recognize that we've got a 4-digit number 15 here, which is written as the letter F.
here we've got the number 8, and we just write that as 8, as in decimal. And then frequently when we're writing down hexadecimal numbers, to be clear that the number we're writing down is to be interpreted as a hexadecimal number rather than a decimal number, it's common in languages like C and Java to add this prefix, the number 0, and then a little letter x. So x, f8, is how we would write down this binary number as a hexadecimal number. You should really learn to recognize how to convert between four-digit numbers between 10 and 15 and the letters. So if somebody writes down 1110, you should say, oh yes, that's an E. And that way, once you have internalized how to convert between four-digit numbers and these high ones and the letters, and the low ones and just numbers, then very quickly you'll be able to convert back and forth between hexadecimal and binary representations. When you come onto labs later on, you'll be keying in binary numbers using hexadecimal notation. So this hex note, often we, instead of saying hexadecimal, which is a bit of a mouthful, we just talk about hex numbers. So hex is just a convenience. Computers still work with binary, we're just using hex for input and output. Let's talk a little bit about now how you represent floating point numbers. Things like the float numbers or the double numbers that you have in Java. So typically these days, the various ways of doing floating point arithmetic. Typically these days, most CPUs implement a standard called IEEE 754 for doing arithmetic, and the examples that we talk through here will be following the standard. The standard is rather large, you really don't care about it, but what you care about for the purposes of this lecture are really just some of the basic principles of how we're representing floating point numbers in a binary representation, how we're using a kind of fixed length word to represent those numbers. So, let's see. For a start, let's look at how we talk about fractions in binary. So just as you have decimal fractions, you can have binary fractions as well. For example, here's the number 0.75, a decimal fraction. It's a number in base 10. In base 2, we can write it the following way. So just as columns to the left of the decimal point are units and tens and hundreds in decimal, and columns to the right are tenths and hundredths. So if we're working binary, columns to the right are halves and quarters and eighths and sixteenths and so on. So here the number 0.11 is a half or 2 to the minus 1 plus a quarter or 2 to the minus 2, or 0.5 plus 0.25, which equals 0.75. So we can have binary, what we call fixed point numbers, just as we have decimal fixed point numbers. And then we call this a binary point rather than a decimal point. So this concept of binary fixed point numbers, we can talk about a number, a fixed point number being normalized, which means we represent it in a scientific notation as what's called a mantissa, and then 2 to the power of what we call an exponent. So you're familiar with scientific notation when you're using base 10 numbers, so we can use exactly the same concept, base 2, where now we've got a power, the exponent is an exponent of the number 2 rather than number 10. And we have a mantissa here whose leading digit is always going to be a 1. If the number that we're talking about is a non-zero number. So here, if we talk about the number 0.11 represented as a what's called a normalized scientific notation floating point number, then we represent that as 1.1 times 2 to the minus 1. Another example here, 25 in base 10 is 11001 in base 2, which can be represented in scientific normalized notation as 1.1001 times 2 to the 4. Everybody happy with that? All right, now we'll look at how we store exponent and mantissa information in a fixed-sized word. What we do is, we take a word, say a 32-bit word, and we say, well, we use one of those bits to talk about the sign of the floating point number. So if the sign is, if this bit is a 1, that means we're dealing with a negative number. If it's a 0, we'll say we're talking about a positive number. We then divide the rest of the bits into two fields, one called the exponent and one called the mantissa. The idea is if we've got a number, if we've got a binary word, binary 32-bit word, and we want, and we say this is a float of an IEEE 754 32-bit number, what we do is we compute the unsigned arithmetic value of each field, and then we do this arithmetic to arrive at the actual number that's being represented. So we treat this S as just a normal number 0 or 1, and we say we've got a minus 1 to the power of S. So remember, minus 1 to the power of 0 is 1. Minus 1 to the power of 1 is minus 1. So we can convert between the binary digit 0 and 1 to either a plus 1 or a minus 1 here. Then what we do is we say, well, if you remember back here, when we've normalized these floating point numbers, this first digit here is always number 1. So unlike in the case of decimal, where it could be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, here the only option is for it to be a 1. And because it's always a 1, we actually don't have to store that 1. So actually, this number here, what's called a significand, is really a set of digits after the binary point, where we've got a 1 before the binary point. And then we do something a little bit quirky, maybe, with the exponent as well. We say that instead of using an exponent stored in 2's complement notation to allow us to talk about positive and negative exponents, we say this exponent is an unsigned number, and to convert it to a signed number, we subtract off 127. So this here then is a recipe for how we take a number here, just how we take a sequence of 32 ones and zeros, and we convert it into a real number, a floating point number. What I haven't said here is what happens with zero. So if you want to represent zero, you don't use this formula here. There's no way of using this formula to get the number zero. It always gives you a non-zero number. So for zero, what we do is we reserve the exponent, which is all zeros, for numbers which aren't in this format here. Rather, we say if these are all zeros and all these are zeros too, then that actually represents the number zero. We get a quirk that still we can have actually a plus zero and minus zero, which mean the same thing. All right, I'm kind of out of time. Sorry, this clock is running slow here. Let me just take kind of... Actually, what I'm going to do is stop there. But we've got one more slide. It says, yeah, just one more slide. I'll deal with the slide at the beginning of next week, because some of you might have other lectures to go to. But let me stop there. This slide here, I mean, you're free to read it. It's all just about how we represent text using binary numbers. I encourage you, as I did Tuesday this week, to go out, buy the textbook, buy this Hennessy and Patterson book for the course. It covers lots and lots of material of the course in very nice detail. And so, for example, it goes over all the material that we went through today in considerable more depth than I've gone through here. And if you want to know what parts of the book to read, then go to the webpage. I haven't updated the webpage yet, but still everything there is pretty much valid because we're so far, we're following very closely how the lectures went last year. But I will get that updated very shortly. All right, thank you, and see you next Tuesday. So, oddly, sometimes what you get is a number which fits into a fixed number bits as a decimal number. It will actually be a reoccurring binary number of binaries. Now, in that case, I can't remember if the fifth.
I guess you can actually focus on anything that is not like a fraction. That is not a perfect super five. There is nothing in between. So you can
So when you're converting to fractions, you actually can't. You can't have exact representations for all decimal fractions.
Right. Yeah.